Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Jason here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show live. I've got my special guest coming on here in just a minute. Hopefully your new year is going well. I'm super excited because the last one I did was New Year's Eve, and here we are in a new year. And I know for a lot of people, even though the calendar changed, nothing else really changed in the world, right? The economy didn't get better. The pandemic didn't get better. But what's interesting is this shift that a lot of people have where this new year and kind of this new start, and it just feels more energetic. It feels like, you know, more things are happening for myself and for the people I talk to. And then this is great to be doing a LinkedIn Live a week later, in the new year, January 7th, and to have a special guest. And I'm going to bring him on in just a moment here. And he is, his name is J.D. Gerschbein. He is a, I don't want to say a LinkedIn expert because he's so much more than that. He focuses on LinkedIn branding strategies, personal branding strategies. He's also a very entertaining guy, lives in the Chicago area and is in that Second City, you know, comedy entertainer, performer, teacher, speaker, trainer kind of environment, and does a lot with shows and things like that. So we're going to talk about branding strategies. Of course, we're going to talk about LinkedIn. We're not going to focus too much on what people are doing, let's say, incorrectly on LinkedIn, especially with the messages. But we'll talk about how to succeed in that. So please help me welcome JD to the show.
Jason, LinkedIn Live. Wow, technology is amazing. I think maybe this internet thing is going to catch on after all.
I think it might. I think it's got some hopes. I think there's a chance that it might stick around. We'll have to see. I don't know.
It's got a shot. It's still early, yeah.
It's still early. But, you know, it's funny on that point, and I've thought about this a lot. Imagine a pandemic. Imagine, let's say, the 1918 Spanish flu.
Okay.
Without internet, without TV, without cable, without cell phones, without, you know, imagine everybody out there who's stuck inside and shelter in place with a radio and maybe a newspaper every once in a while. So,
well, you couldn't consistently communicate with others. And I think that's why we lost 500 million people.
Possibly. Yeah. And one of the things, and the silver lining for all this for me is that in this state, it's, you know, kind of forced people to expand their network out of their comfort zone, maybe in their local area. And then people like us, you know, end up meeting and forming relationships and doing some fun, you know, joint type ventures together.
Well, it's a great tone you're setting, because if anything, the global pandemic has taught us to dwell within our own authenticity. And authenticity has really come on. I've always thought it's one of the great traits of leadership. But now, suddenly, it's a coachable skill, and there are people building platforms around authenticity. Yourself, myself, I think it's a piece of who we are. It's integral to the human condition, and let's face it, it sells.
So for the, let's say, for the five people out there who don't know who you are that are on LinkedIn, because you've been on LinkedIn for a very long time, why don't you just tell people, you know, who you are, what you focus on, you know, and maybe a glimpse of what we're going to chat about.
Well, I'm not one of the founding members by any means. I'm a mid-stage early adopter. So I came in at around the 23, 24 million level, as best as my recollection will allow me. And at the time that I was on the site or created my account, nobody I knew professionally had heard of LinkedIn. So it wasn't so much that I could create an account and go have this career. A lot of things had to happen for me to have a career. Fortunately, they did. But the talk back then was about how cool this platform was and what I thought it could do, and approach people with a bit of a futuristic view of saying, hey, what if you did this? What if you put yourself out there in this way and advertised yourself and promoted yourself? What could happen? People will eventually get to your website, but this has a chance to be a marker and your first point of reference in the business universe. And Haven't been visionary with too much, JC, but this one worked out pretty well. It has, in fact, become our lifeline in business, LinkedIn.
And what I appreciate about that, what you said, is a couple of things. One is the branding side, which is important for people at all levels. I mean, this is something I try to tell to salespeople and to my clients, companies all the time, is for most people, especially if you're in B2B sales, before somebody gets on the phone to talk to you, right? No matter how they found you, just through your own brand, cold email, whatever it is, they will have searched for you. Just assume that everybody has searched you, has looked you up, even if you're an individual salesperson at a larger company. A lot of people think, ah, it doesn't matter because it's not me. I'm just a, you know, an account executive at a company. And usually what that defaults to is people Googling you and then finding maybe your Facebook or your Instagram, some unprofessional stuff. That's what they judge you on. And then it starts off rough.
Well, LinkedIn enjoys a very favorable position with Google. And when someone is searching for you by name, and unless you share your name with dozens, hundreds, thousands of people, where is your LinkedIn profile going to come up in the Google search? At or near the top. So it's only human nature to click over to those sites that get that weight and that emphasis. And LinkedIn has emerged, as you say, as the de facto platform for just a first glance, that first impression. And my career is founded on the premise that people don't have much time to capture your attention when they view your profile. So what you have better be accurate, better be compelling, and it better frame you well.
Let's talk about that, because one of the services that you provide, just from your experience of branding and relationships and marketing and just all the things that you have done to this point, what you've been doing for years for your clients is LinkedIn profile strategy, projects, building, rebuilding. Sometimes probably, I'm sure, a lot of tearing down the house and then rebuilding it from scratch because it's a mess. What are some tips? What are some things that you see, either tips of what people should do, or do you want to start with where do people kind of go the wrong direction with their profile or their headline? And what are some of the basics you see? Please stop.
Well, I'm really not the kind of advisor that harps on the mistakes people make, because I don't believe there's any learning there. There are enough people in my trade that do that. And I'd rather be the guiding light than the voice of doom. And I don't really classify as a LinkedIn profile writer per se. I take people through a process. It's not just, here's my stuff, JD, make it sing. It's truly about working with people on their psychological narrative and meeting them where they are right now, where they've been, but also with an eye toward the future, what they'd like to accomplish, how they feel they'd like to accomplish it, with whom they would like to accomplish it. So nowadays, and the pandemic has reinforced this with me to a certain point, is we have to become great shepherds of our story. We're the only ones who could truly tell it properly. And if we don't tell it, we can't sell it. So my work, especially in the foundational side, is to help people gain that clarity and come clear on the pieces of their story that will resonate with a target audience or an ideal end user of their product service. So that's where I kind of live right now in the space. The field of LinkedIn profile writing, like anything else in business, has become highly commoditized, and there's plenty of people doing it, and everybody's got their own take. But my approach and what differentiates me in that approach is through journalism. And I have a bit of a gift for extracting story and for organizing and prioritizing the elements of that story into a compelling whole. And that's what, and by whole, I mean whole, Jason. I didn't want you to think it was going down a hole of any kind. The hole, the gestalt feeling that people get when they view a profile and they know they're on a profile from someone who has really kind of put some thought into it and really worked at it. I mean, so many folks are defaulting to generic language or repurposing an existing bio or taking text verbatim from their resume. Not the way to do it on LinkedIn, and not right now. Because if you're truly to move the needle in business or in your career, you have to kind of open the window to your world, kind of crack it open and show them who you are, what you're made of, what you stand for, that kind of thing.
So one of the things that I know we wanted to touch on was authenticity on LinkedIn. You already mentioned it. Obviously, anybody that's here on the show knows that that's what I focus on a lot, especially in sales, the transparency. Let's sticking with the profile part. What advice? And again, I know that, you know, staying away from the commodity, the LinkedIn profile writing, but just strategies. People listening to this go, okay, I should look at my profile a different way because here's what I, you know, here's what works better or here's what might resonate better. What have you found or what would you tell people in general?
I just have conversations with them and I inspire them just by letting them know where I've been. I think there's something to be said for experiential knowledge and what I've done. I can't advise people to do anything unless I've experienced that. And I'm very client-centric in my approach. So I will always tell people, look, we're all works in progress. We're all trying to get better, do better. We're all continuously adapting, reinventing ourselves, improving ourselves, communicating with the world. And from that, you take and you build and you assimilate and you put this version of yourself out there. And if it doesn't work, hey, you can course correct. LinkedIn gives us the opportunity to reconstruct ourselves in real time. And that's very important. The profile can pace with wherever you are in business or in your career right now. But it does require some time, some cognitive steam to really separate yourself from just the idle activity of fronting a profile to really putting yourself beneath it and around it and enveloping that content and becoming that story. And the version of you that people see on LinkedIn has to match the version that they glean from you in the real world. And in that respect, we're on Zoom calls right now. So if you're Zooming with people and who isn't right now, right, go in with a little bit of knowledge, arm yourself with some acquaintance with their story, be able to, again, bring things up that you read, show them that you've scrolled down to the belly of the page and you're picking up some tidbits from their life. So I think there's a lot of new psychology, some shifts in the way that we behave on the site that can really put us in position to win business once we stay within our authenticity.
What's interesting is yesterday I recorded a podcast with Dr. Suzanne Peterson. And when I asked her what authenticity means, she responded with consistency, which means consistent in the boardroom or in the happy hour. Obviously, some variations of there, maybe a little more social here. But if you're relational in the happy hour, are you also relational in the boardroom? Are you also relational when you meet somebody for the first time or not? You know, some people are like relational the happy hour and then just cold over here. And that really throws people off. And I love what you said about, you know, just kind of that authenticity piece and being the same that you are on LinkedIn as you would be when you meet somebody, especially in that profile. A lot of people write the profile like they would write the brochure with all the highlights and all the fantastic things, and they want to make it sound so good. And then you meet them and it's like, yeah, that doesn't fit. That's where you'd like to be. That's what you want people to think. But that's not where you're at.
I think that's more of a treatment on what I would call brand congruence, where you are this person through the various media. Brand congruence is one of the key elements of branding, that you should have this congruent element about you so that where people catch you in all other places online, especially, that you are this person. And there's some things that tie that brand together. With authenticity, I think it means to just be the genuine article. I mean, you're yourself and I'm myself and people that are themselves. And we sometimes put constraints on ourselves. And part of the reason we do it is because it's our reptilian brain that keeps us from being who we really are. So yeah. The reptilian brain keeps us lodged in our comfort zone. And it is what keeps people from really letting others in or keeping much of what they talk about below the waterline. They don't bring it up above the waterline so people can see it. They repress, they suppress. And as a consequence, they don't come off as authentic, or they come off as some other quality, or they sell. And I think there's a certain amount of authenticity required from salespeople today before they've earned the trust to sell.
I love that you brought up the reptilian brain. As you're talking about that and the authenticity piece and people holding back, what always jumps to my mind too is abundance versus scarcity mindset. And the scarcity mindset, which is if I'm myself, I'm not going to get the business, right? And I think of a friend of mine made friends with over LinkedIn, also pandemic, you know, blossoming friendship, Jared Thomas, and he is who he is. He wears his hat. He dresses how he dresses, but he's a business-to-business sales guy, all relational, and it's just who he is. He's consistent and coming from abundance. Like, you either like him or you don't. You either like me, you either like you, and that's it.
Well, how about trying to create a scarcity bias on yourself? Create the fear of missed opportunity by not working with you. And I have a blue ocean philosophy. And for those of you who are not familiar with blue ocean, it's out there. Google it. Very easy to read and figure out that I'm in the J.D. Gerspein business and I have no competitors. So whereas I provide a service that many others do, nobody does it the way I do. Nobody has my sequencing of proteins on my DNA strands. Nobody has my personality. Nobody has my journalistic flair. Nobody has my command of language. And obviously we're different in the way we look and the way we act and the way we behave. So you find people that you'd like to plug into. These are what coaches and consultants and advisors obviously have to do right now, is because there's so many people out there coaching and so many people who need to be coached. My gosh, how are we going to intersect with each other? It's all about whose persona do you like? Who looks good online? Who's conveying trust? Who looks authentic? And who do you feel your personality best is in greatest synchronicity with?
Love it. All right. So we've got Mookie Misao. He said, earlier you were talking about branding, you were talking about profiles, and he said, if you can't tell it, we can't sell it. Which I love, especially from a company, you know, branding standpoint. And what you're saying, right? It's like, tell that story, and then you can sell that, and that's what people will want. And then he asked this question here. Let me know your thoughts. He asked, what if you want to brand yourself differently from your profession, i.e. this is what I do for work versus this is what I want to be known for or as?
Well, what you're going to be known for or as is what comes through the writing and in your interpersonal relationships. So there are people who are out there who suffer from what I call versatility syndrome or multiple brand syndrome, or they're involved in so many different things and they don't know what emphasis they ought to place on each of these aspects of their professional lives. LinkedIn profile viewers are very fickle. They are coming to your page with not that much time or attention. So if you give them something that they can glom onto right away, and a razor sharp, high impact branding statement right there in the professional headline, and everything kind of supporting that in the first couple of sentences in the about section, you've at least got that positioning on impact. You've got that there. They can at least hold you in their mind, and you can affix yourself or implant yourselves in the mind. And then when you speak with them, when you have these Zoom meetings or phone calls with them, which is our opportunities now to really reinforce who we are as brands, ideally it starts to take hold and you get remembered for the products you sell, the services you provide, the niche you're trying to drive, the company you work for, or the skill sets that you're building.
Awesome. Mookie, thanks for that question. Appreciate you stopping by today. So we got another one here, and want your thoughts on this as well, and I have some as well. So Logan Coley, he just threw into the chat here on LinkedIn, says, since this is a business platform, shouldn't you try to keep it as professional as possible? What I am is LinkedIn, you know, what I'm thinking is what it means is I am on LinkedIn for B2B, and B2C, as where Facebook and other social medias are meant for social activity, not active business. Just curious on what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I'm seeing the erosion of what we would call the more austere business communication patterns and into a changing engagement dynamic. I mean, just think of the social science around how people are communicating through a global pandemic. We're much more vulnerable. We're showing much more fragility in the human condition right now. And we're motivated to tell our stories a little bit more, and we're under pressure to tell our stories a little more. That's what sells. And obviously during a pandemic, there are health and wellness checks going on out there. Empathy has really risen. I believe it's one of the great traits in leadership. I'm an empath, and I'm very heart-centered in my approach. Again, that meeting people where they live thing. So it really comes down to engaging with authenticity in a way that means something to your conversation partner. And there are people who are just assaulting LinkedIn with content right now. I mean, it's a deluge. It's like the wild, wild west out there. And sometimes it's seen, sometimes it's not. But the key is keep putting it out there. Keep asserting your will and your force on the system and interact in a meaningful fashion with people and build those relationships, invest in those relationships. Relationships, interestingly, follow the basic laws of equity so that if you do put deposits into it, at some point you can withdraw it. So there's a beautiful economy of engagement going on right now. And I just encourage my clients and students to go out there and be themselves, of course, but just look for ways that they can inject their personalities into the stream. And from there, ideally good things happen. When you do this thing enough, it's almost impossible to make something it's almost impossible not to make something good happen.
And my thoughts on Logan's question and point is, I think going to what you said with the authenticity, the brand consistency, congruency, where it's still you, right? It's all over. Now, the message on LinkedIn is going to be business focused. I don't enjoy when LinkedIn posts become like a Facebook social post. I don't care about the political stuff or somebody's lunch or pictures of their kids so much. You know, sometimes it's appropriate, like for an update, like, hey, you know, this is going on in my life, but that's not why I'm on LinkedIn. That's why I would be on the social media platforms. So I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with keeping business over here and keeping this over here.
No cat videos, please. Just keep the
cat
videos off LinkedIn.
Yeah. I totally agree. And then also just understanding that people are going to find you in all the places. So you've got to be aware of what you're posting. And if you're worried about your business contacts seeing your personal stuff because they might not like it, then that's kind of an incongruent thing that's just always going to potentially pop up and something to be aware of and maybe something to reflect on. So, Logan, thanks for that question.
It is a politically correct site still, and there are formalities and conventions on the site, and you will truly offend the purists. And I consider myself a purist if you do things that are ridiculously against the grain of LinkedIn. Quick story. I'm in the early going when I was teaching people how to communicate and post online and what should they post, how should they post it, should they link. And this was before all of the discussion on the LinkedIn algorithm, which is this mystic force that kind of sweeps content all over the ecosystem. I would tell people to put things that do humanize them in a way. And I broke character a while ago in 2013 when I was overcome with grief for the passing of my dog. And if any of you have ever put down a dog, I mean, come on, man, you know that you've got to give people their space to grieve on that. And I just thought, okay, I've never done anything like this before. And I went on and I did a really cool piece / post on my dog, Blaze, who was really with me the whole time as I was moving my consultancy forward. And I got more engagement off that post than I probably did in a dozen really high value LinkedIn posts combined that were more didactic and learning oriented. So the fact that I went human resonated with a lot of people, and I was able to connect with some pretty cool people, obviously dog people, but people who kind of applauded the notion that here I was, this LinkedIn educator, going out there and doing something that a lot of people think is a little weird or hokey on the site.
Yeah.
It kind of is, but you know what? I put a business tie into it. I spoke about my career with this animal as I built a career working out of my home. And that's, I think, what resonated with people.
Well, and I think the thing that I've seen with that is everybody's going through something. We're all kind of in this thing together, life, and people can relate. And, you know, people on their own side know that they're going through something and they're trying to keep this, you know, positive front going on, or they're trying to win in their business or in their sales career. And then just things happen. So
things do happen. Yeah. And they also try too hard, Jason. I think that's another key piece, is you try too hard to be a little bit too esoteric in your business. And if your network isn't built, or they're in a way where they're going to be receptive to your proprietary content, that too is tough. We have to assemble our networks and make them robust with people who are going to be responsive and willing to engage on what we put out there. If it's something that has no relevance to some people, and it's fair to say that not everybody in our networks considers our content to be relevant, but still to support, to validate, and to kind of weigh in when you feel inclined to weigh in on a colleague's post, I think that's really important, and it speaks volumes, and people notice that.
Patty Joe said, thank you for the content you're bringing, and thank you, JD, for such great tips. And Logan, when you were talking about, I think, mostly your personal post and your story, said amen. So, that's appreciated. And I think those go a long way. Let's talk about persuasion / versus classical influence in business.
All right.
Where do you see that fitting in? Like the classical influence tactics of a business versus persuasion, especially if we're talking about, relationships started on a LinkedIn or, branding started on online that's then leading into something more.
Classical influence is a fascinating sub-discipline of psychology and how we motivate others, how we induce action or behavior in others. This is an ongoing challenge in business. It's been written about many, many times, and there are very prominent people in the field. For me, I believe in localized influence, and I believe in gaining receptivity with people and moving them to new actions or thoughts strictly on how you respond to them and giving them the option to, or the opportunity to be heard, and where it becomes more collaborative. And once you're in a kind of a collaborative vein, it's much easier to find your influence. And these days you can't sell a product or provide a service or get the cherry gig or open a door to advance your career without some kind of influence playing out behind the scenes. So I'm truthfully much more, focused on influencing just a few rather than many, because it's a lot of responsibility to be a mass influencer. I don't want that responsibility. I like to influence where I can or where I see possibilities, but otherwise I lay back. I let the conversation kind of come to me. And when it's time to put something out there in the universe, I do. And I hope it's smart.
What I appreciate about that message too is I feel that a lot of people, whether it's abundance or scarcity, they feel like their goal or what it takes to be successful is to get everybody in their tribe, to persuade and influence everybody, to have everybody as a follower, right?
Yes.
I'll just say use my own words, if I look at it and go, okay, well, Facebook has how many millions of users? LinkedIn has how many millions of users? Okay. How many followers, how many contacts, how many clients do I need? And that compulsion where the goal is to amass everybody into a tribe. And I heard somebody say this months ago to me is like, no, the goal is not to have everyone in your tribe. The goal is to have your tribe have your group, and then I have my tribe, and then somebody else has their tribe that they're supporting and growing and nurturing and helping, thrive and grow.
Right.
And then if everyone does that, they've got their own little pockets, and then everybody is lifted up.
True. And we're talking about, I like to advance the concept of localized influencing or situational influence, where you have the ability to influence a connection on LinkedIn. And here's where we draw a disparity between those who would send the default formulaic boilerplate invitation to connect on LinkedIn, as opposed to personalizing the invitation and providing a framework for a relationship to flourish. So I'm a big advocate of personalizing the invitation to connect and letting people know where I met them, how I met them, and what I hope to achieve through a connection with them. And that's influencing their acceptance of the invitation, as opposed to coming on like a typical sales hound and having them ignore me or decline me or even report me, which would never happen because I'm just way too courteous. But at the same time, influencing outcomes is what we're here to do. I mean, we're all selling. Make no mistake about it. But subliminal selling is where it's at. The ability to influence through written word, through video marketing, through podcasting, through a broadcast like this. Are we influencing anybody? Can't tell. can't get into the mind of another person. We don't know. But if this translates into invitations to connect for either of us, we've influenced someone somewhere. And we just keep trying to measure that influence. Do we have capacity to increase it? Of course we do. Do we want to run our lives like a reality show? No, at least I don't. Maybe some people do. I don't. I mean, these folks with a million plus, millions of followers and friends and all this. Okay, it's very puffy chested to say that, but what's it doing for you? Is it converting? Plenty of folks out there with very small networks and small followings who are widely acknowledged as thought leaders.
So let's talk about, well, I guess before I do that, one of the things you said that I think is fascinating and to remember is LinkedIn, business, everyone is here for some kind of business purpose, right? Maybe gaining information, maybe learning so that they can grow their business or grow their professional life. Some, you know, it could just be educational. I'm here to collect information. I'm here for sourcing stuff so I can get better at what I do. I don't need to buy anything. I don't need to hire somebody to get me more leads. I'm not here for recruiting. So that one end, or they're here for, you know, growing their team or being open to things. And it's interesting when somebody is really shut down and be like, no, I don't want anybody to talk to me about business or selling me anything. It's like, well, you know, this is kind of that platform where everyone here is, you know, pre-selected because they're in some business.
That's true. And selling is everywhere. Pitches are rampant. And that's not a LinkedIn problem. LinkedIn can't police all of that stuff. It's a LinkedIn user problem. And somewhere along the line, people got on the site. They saw that this was what was happening to them. So they figured, oh, well, I'm going to sell the crap out of this. And they just keep spamming and keep churning out these messages. And with the proliferation of digital marketing automated software overlays that just scrape keywords off profiles and shoot out tens of thousands of these invitations to connect, which in my opinion, folks, the most egregious breach of ethics there is on LinkedIn is overtly selling someone on the point of the invitation to connect. It just goes against the grain of everything I'm about and how I teach LinkedIn. You know, work on the relationship first. Shift away from the transactional and to the relational and watch what happens. You'll start to build trust and establish rapport. And suddenly the conversation will take on a life of its own and veer into the areas where you can start to take the buyer down the journey.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff. No long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. And I love that you said, you know, it's not a LinkedIn problem. It's a LinkedIn user problem. So I changed the banner here because one of the things we want to talk about is becoming better users. But I feel like there is some consistency of how people act. Most people act the same way over here as they do over here. It's tough for sometimes for people to separate that. What they do online is probably who they are. And you see that out in the real world where people instantly try to close somebody and sell somebody as soon as they meet them, right? Like I had a guest on my podcast and he said his goal, because he's an insurance salesperson and runs a company, is to not be that weird guy at the barbecue that as soon as you meet him, because he's in the insurance business, he needs to pitch you on insurance and talk about insurance and quote you insurance, right? And so he shifts and other people shift, but they're still those people. They would have sold you. You meet them at the grocery store, and next thing you know, they want you to sign up for their MLM. Well, now they're on here just doing the same thing.
I'm the recipient of a lot of those messages. It's offensive. It's intrusive. It's annoying. And I report those people to LinkedIn. I have zero tolerance for spam on LinkedIn. And what I try to do, Jason, is that's the call of leadership that I've answered. I want to be a leader by example on the site. Granted, we are selling ourselves, but promoting oneself artfully is really the key here. It will separate the true technicians from the hacks. And that's what I try to show folks. I show them what's possible by playing the short game and turning that short game into a longer game through focused conversation, trust building, conversation.
What are some of those habits, trends, things that you try to espouse in other people, your students, your clients, even yourself, to be better users and stewards of LinkedIn for, again, business purposes, long-term? We're not just like, okay, we're here to have fun, like for eventual business results.
Exactly. And we seem to be in this state of excessive flattery. And there's so much support-seeking behavior out there. And as someone who's around this authentic persuasion, there's persuading people and there's persuading people authentically. And look, I've had students who want to connect with me and they kind of just throw it up there and seeing, you know, they'll send me an invitation. I spoke on a lot of college campuses, so students would want to connect with me. And maybe in the back of some student's mind, it was like, oh, okay, well, maybe he won't connect with me. He's established in business and I'm just the student. But boy, I surprise them, because when they approach me with courtesy and respect and they let a little bit of honesty kind of filter in and say, hey, I appreciated the time you spent with us today and would sincerely appreciate the opportunity to connect with you. I mean, how does that sound? How would that sound to you if you got an invitation to connect like that? Of course you're going to accept and you're going to start building a relationship. So one thing that separates me from, oh, maybe 99.99% of the user base is that I'm the guy that's not going to let my new connection off the hook. I'm going to thank him or her for inviting me. I'm going to end each message with a question so I can kind of keep these messages in play. So when I look at my message center on LinkedIn, I have at this stage of at any stage, dozens, if not hundreds of conversations in play, bookmarked where I need to just weigh in or I'm waiting for the respondent to weigh in. So I just keep conversations in play. And that's really what effective LinkedIn use comes down to: effective conversation management, good decision making, critical thinking, and taking time with people. There's no substitute for experience in front of the computer, taking time with people, maybe moving them to a Zoom conversation as quickly as you possibly can, getting to know them, seeing that if there is a basis for the connection. People connect with each other blindly on LinkedIn. If we paid attention to LinkedIn's terms of service and stayed away from people we didn't know, we wouldn't have networks, because we would just be connecting with the people we know well. But everybody here has been on the receiving end of an invitation where they don't know the source or they don't know why the connection would make sense. But yet we do it. We take them in. They take us in. But now what? We've got these two polar bodies here. We've got these cells. We're having mitosis. We're trying to separate out. We're trying to build our own respective networks. Is there opportunity? Can we cross-pollinate? Is there something we can co-create? So I always approach people from the place of service, altruism, and say, look, what can we do together? They know what I do. They've read my profile. I don't need to harp on that. Now, if they ask me questions about my profile and I've discerned a need for my services, that's a whole nother story. But when you're starting to build trust and do this rapport establishing piece, that's where we have to find our influence, because our influence will keep these conversations going.
One of the things you mentioned was at the end of every one of your direct messages, when you're chatting with somebody, is you ask a question. That way to keep the conversation going, which I think is great. Instead of just being like, hey, it's nice to connect with you, let me know if I can do anything, or, you know, some kind of lame ending of a conversation where it's just going to die off. Then there's,
well, that's one this of the guy. Thoughts. That's this guy, yeah. Jason. Yeah.
Which guy?
That's the guy that sends out the default LinkedIn invitation, the reptilian brain, because I want to stay ensconced in my comfort zone. There's no growth in the comfort zone. So why should I grow and expand? I'd rather play it safe, get the connection, and just bail out and go dark on you. So that's what's typical. People will connect with you and maybe get a thank you note or engineer a response of some kind. And then you just exist as names and thumbnails in people's directories. So I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy. I understand my reptilian brain and what it's trying to do. But at the same time, I'm the guy that's going to communicate with you. I'm going to ask you, hey, what's next? Where do we go from here? What can we build on?
So one of the things that I've noticed, though, and this is both my sales training coaching side looking at things and always wanting to optimize and help people, but then also my very skeptical, pessimistic consumer side that was raised to always be on high alert for salespeople trying to sell, especially if it's something I don't want, where I know that I know that when I connect with someone and they ask me a question, especially depending on the service they provide, they're asking questions because they're trying to inch or run towards the point at which they can ask me if I'm interested in their services.
Not necessarily with me, though. Not necessarily with me. And I understand your...
How do you handle that?
I don't sell. Really, JD? You don't sell? I don't freaking sell.
Yeah.
My profile sells me. My mission on LinkedIn, should I choose to accept it, is to bring as many people as I can to my LinkedIn profile, because it is set up to sell me, so that when you get me on a Zoom call or a LinkedIn live show, I just talk about who I am, my guiding principles, what I stand for. I like to have fun, but in the back of people's minds, they know what I do. Why should I have to beat them over the head with a sledgehammer with it? Now, that said, that's what distinguishes me from others in the trade. I don't talk that game. So when people are receiving a fourth or fifth message from me and they're worried about a sales pitch coming down the pipe and they don't get it, well, what a sigh of relief that is, huh? We're about four or five touch points into this thing and he hasn't sold me yet. So I don't do that. Now, of course, do I have leading edge questions? I do. But you know what? I'm skilled in the art of conversation. I know what I'm doing. I don't want to offend anybody. If people are truly in the market for what I provide, they'll let me know about it. I let the conversation come to me, and that's truly how I roll. And I've built a very successful practice that way because people don't feel threatened. Because once they get into a working engagement with me, they grow. They're going to get better. They're going to have a rock star LinkedIn profile. They're going to learn more about the site. And ideally, they'll take some of the things that I'm imparting and they'll see an improvement in the conversations they're having. Truth be known, nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to be thought of as someone's lead right now. And with all the emphasis on lead generation in the heart of a global pandemic where people are struggling to live, put food on the table, grow a business, feel like they're the have-nots and are watching how the haves are doing it. I just try to meet people from this kind of heart-centered place and say, look, yes, you know what I do. It's there. If you want to ask me questions, I'm happy to answer. But let's focus on how I can help what you're all about. What are you trying to accomplish? Who do I know who I can introduce you to? You avail yourself to folks in your network before a sales pitch, and you vault to the top, my friend.
And I think the key is, this is what I focus on, which there's a fine line. There's a tough spot there sometimes. But what you're doing in your process, which is four or five touch points, no sales pitch, getting on a call or Zoom, no sales pitch, just getting to know them, seeing what value you can provide. You're a great connector, a great networker. You know, it's like, hey, you know, check out this. You might want to check out this, you know. Connect with this person, is what you're doing is you're looking for the people who are open and eager, because I know for myself, and I know based on the service you provide, that's the people you want anyway. I mean, you're doing some transformational stuff. You need a student, a client who is open and willing and ready to take what you give them and run forward. The last thing you want is someone who's at 0 miles an hour and convince them they have a problem and then convince them to ramp it up and then get them to go full speed ahead, which is what those instant sales pitches do, right? And there's a fine, the reason I say it's a fine line is because I see a lot of people default to order taker mode, which is, okay, well, you're here, you're telling me that I need to get the people who are open and ready. Yes, but you still need to persuade them when the time comes and they have issues. But you really want the people, and that's the abundant side, right?
It's infuriating when people approach me as if we're like-minded. Jason, I like connecting with like-minded people like you. I mean, how the hell do you know we're like-minded? So I don't like the assumptions. They're very bold assumptions that salespeople make that what they have will benefit you. And again, it's they're bypassing the whole relationship building process. You can't do that on LinkedIn. And you can't cold email people on the site. It has to come organically through your own experience. And that's how I've played it. And that's how I will always play it. I'm just, you know, I've been around the block. This ain't my first rodeo. I understand what's going out there on the social platforms. And I know people are selling and sometimes from a place of survival and desperation, but that doesn't give you the right to just slam me like that. I don't try to fit a square peg into a round hole.
I agree. I mean, and that's some classic sales mistakes that I see all the time, which is what I have is what everyone's going to want. That assumption that you're going to need what I have because it's so amazing because either I made it myself or my boss told me how amazing it is and they got me to drink the Kool-Aid. And then, you know, people do that in the real world. I'm going to say the real world, the non-virtual world when they're selling, which is where they do their monologue. They talk about themselves. They talk about their logos, their branding, their case studies, all about themselves before they even care about you. And then they come and do that the same thing here. And they assume, hey, if you're like me or like my clients, I'm sure you need 20 to 30 new clients a week, right? I'm like, no. And why do you assume that? And so I think it's interesting because again, this goes back to how people sell. Non-virtual is generally what they try to do virtual, and it just doesn't work, and it's not effective.
Well, that's the bane of the professional development industry, and I mean, I'm in that industry, and I stick up for it, and I believe that people do want to develop themselves professionally, and ideally, listening to a conversation like this is professional development because it comes from the experience of someone like myself that just doesn't do what others are doing. I believe in salmoning and swimming upstream or going against the grain because those are the results that work for me and my clients. So what I try to do is, again, here's what others are doing. Okay. Again, I don't dwell on the mistakes, but here's what others are doing. This is probably not the approach that's going to work for a lot of people because they're going to get slammed and they're going to hear no more than they say yes. But again, collaborative mindset, growth mindset, leveraging LinkedIn in its most powerful way to just get yourself present and in the visual fields of people who may be able to retain you. That's what works. I promise you that's what works. Selling impulsively to people, it will offend them. They're not going to buy. Game over.
And, if that does work, because sometimes it does work in selling where you get that person, now that person feels like they've done you a favor and they feel like you owe them because they bought into it. And I promise they're going to be a terrible client if they do. So your friend Holland, she says that you really understand service and connecting. So glad you're here. Thanks for joining, Holland.
Thank you, Holland.
Let's talk about networking and winning business in this pandemic. So for anybody who doesn't know you, you are an amazing networker, amazing connector.
Stop yourself.
I mean, like that's how we met because of network and connecting and people who are like, you know, we met in a networking thing and it was like, okay, you need to meet JD and then you've connected me and then I've seen you in other events. Like I end up in a random mastermind event and of course, who's there? Mr. JD, of course. And it's like, of course you would be here. You're like everywhere. So
You're stalking me, Jason.
Maybe that's it. That's very possible. It's very possible. It's my side, and it's working. I got you here, so hey, it worked. What do you suggest? I mean, what are you seeing that's working well for networking, and not just networking relationships? Let's just be buddies, but winning business, right? That's the key end result we're looking for with the right type of prospects.
I'm on record as saying that networking is the new prospecting. And boy, I'll tell you, the term Zoom fatigue simply does not apply to me. And for anybody that's starting to use Zoom fatigue as an excuse or a cop-out from attending certain events or meetups, you can't expect the kind of results that others who attend and who are proactive in following up can expect. And I think that's what separates the contenders from the pretenders, are those who attend, video on, microphone unmuted, and are looking to weigh in and contribute value of some kind, and are excelling in the breakout room experiences too. Look, there's a certain awkwardness to the whole thing. I'm no stranger to the virtual world. I've been working virtually since I sent my first email, really. But now in these virtual networking events, this is all we have. We can't meet people face to face. We can't have eye contact other than through a webcam and a device screen. So A, make the best of it. B, level up. And there are plenty of people now who are upskilling people on having better video conferencing, better video presentations, better follow-up. It's all in the messaging. It's all about how you show up, step up, and follow up. If you're going to show up disheveled and you don't look the part, you look disenfranchised or not engaged or hygienically inappropriate. We've seen a few of those folks. If your set isn't dressed well, if your lighting is poor, if your technology is pallid or weak, maybe it's just time to invest a little bit. Buy a better camera, buy a better computer. This is where it's heading. It ain't slowing up anytime soon. So networking now becomes an indispensable skill for survival in the business world.
And compounding that, which, and again, I think it's one of those things, if you want to get better at something, then get better at it. A lot of people have excuses. They say, well, I can't because I don't have good lighting. I don't have a good camera. I can't do this. It doesn't, like, why don't you? I mean, if you want to get better at something, do it, right?
It's Amazon is fully restocked with high def cameras and ring lights. Go for it.
There was a moment there where they weren't, and now it's better. So there's really no, like, this far into it, if you don't have that something of a better setup, it doesn't have to be professional. Nobody has to be the JD professional, which if you're watching this live, there's a door behind him, which is the upcoming studio, which is going to be the amazing part with all the professional lighting, because JD is truly a professional at lighting and sound and all that. But that doesn't mean you have to go that far, right? Just get a webcam, get some better light, and just bring, you know, that side where people go, they're not this, because really what it is sometimes it's the unprofessional bit where it's like, do I want to work with this person? They can't get their stuff together. For me, I'm a little more relaxed on that, but what it comes is distracting. Like, I can't see them. I can't hear them. Like, I'm just distracted by their background, and maybe I'm not listening as much as I would. You know, I'm pretty forgiving because I understand not everyone's going to be a tech person. I know I'm not. I've evolved a lot over this year. Yeah. But at least don't be distracting with your, you know, how you're showing up. And then the other part I was going to mention, which goes into everything we've been saying, is what I see a lot is people go into network events and they're so desperate. They're so hungry. They're going into these events so that they can sell and get clients. And they're breaking these same rules that we talked about, which is, no, lead with a relationship, lead with value. How can I help you? And how can I give to give, not give to get, right? I'm going to help you. I'm going to connect you with someone. Oh, and by the way, now I want you as a client.
It's like the Chamber of Commerce at some of these events. And even seasoned networkers can fall prey to that as well. And there's no question that there are folks struggling right now. But when you put your information in the chat room, all I put in the chat room is the link to my LinkedIn profile. You build up the profile to the point where you're confident about that. Just stick that in the chat room. Don't give me your primary and your secondary and your tertiary email addresses. Don't give me your 1-800 phone number, and don't pitch. You know, it's amazing how we kind of sling that word pitch around at networking events, which is kind of, it's very salesy. I prefer to call it a value statement, a unique proposition of value, and try to reverse engineer it from the client side as opposed to I do or I work with or I help or I assist. When it comes out of the first person, it automatically kind of sounds a little megalomaniacal, and you want to kind of tone it down so people on the receiving side can actually visualize what it might be like to work with you or collaborate with you or maybe enter into a referral alliance with you. And when people network, they shouldn't be interested in busting quota. They should be interested in meeting a few good human beings that they can schedule some great one-on-one Zoom calls with and use those Zoom calls as a LinkedIn live show. Have a conversation like you and I are having, Jason, and just get to know people. For gosh sakes, how are you handling yourself during the pandemic? How many kids do you have? How are your kids doing? That kind of thing. So once you start to kind of go there, and I think people know what we mean by go there, you approach people from a more visceral angle, they're going to be more inclined to ask you eventually. So Jason, what is it that you do? What's your ideal client look like? And how can I support what you're doing?
Yeah. And what I found is if you're going to networking events, even if you're spending time on LinkedIn, this goes back to the theme of a lot of what we've been talking about with ways to help with that. But if you're going to those events because you need sales now, it's not going to work. Like no matter what, it's not going to equal anything now. And so it's about being present and having the right focus. Real quick, Anthony Chidi, I think if I said that right, thanks for these programs, really slacking on business. Nice thing, Anthony, it's the 7th of the year. It's not even too late to get started, right? It's like not even the New Year's resolution where it's already February and, you know, it's already fallen out. Like what's great is just even being aware and being here, watching these kind of things. I would suggest checking out JD's LinkedIn profile, which again, we've been talking about it a lot. Obviously, that's what JD focuses on. But looking at your profile, kind of seeing a model for how it represents you, not for how it should be done, right? Because I don't think there's a formula for everything. I know for you, you customize what you do for every client because every person's different, right?
Exactly. Well, and I've also re-engineered my profile as well as my clients' profiles who I'm working with for COVID-19 times because I mean, let's face it, we're broadcasting here 10 months into a pandemic that's showing no signs of abating. The vaccines are rolling out. I'm a professional speaker. My industry has been decimated. I don't know when I'm returning to a live stage. I mean, could be sometime in 2022. We're moving to a so-called hybrid environment, but it's not going to be the same. So we are confined until further notice to the virtual world. That means set up your brand, your personal brand infrastructure. Make sure your business has virtualized and make sure, again, that you're meeting the right folks and people who can bring you into other networking opportunities. And this is telegraphed through the profile. You should be speaking in your profile about with whom you'd like to connect and what types of things you're looking for. You're not asking, you're not selling, but okay. Here's a little advanced knowledge for you when you come into our one-on-one Zoom. In fact, in my confirmation email for folks who schedule with me, I make it a point to ask them to review my profile. Now, I'm not asking them to take a day off work and go through everything, but just to get an idea, because if someone's going to start a Zoom call with, so JD, what is it that you do?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, game over.
Yeah.
So.
Agreed. And I think that's a great place to stop and focus. I mean, it's all about relationships, right? It's about what you put into it, you're going to get out.
I believe so.
If you put in the research. Yeah. If you put in the research, if you look up some information about somebody and see what kind of value you can have, I think that's great. Before we leave, obviously everyone can find you on LinkedIn. It's what we've been talking about. There's also a couple other sites you have. You have owlishcommunications.com and jdgershbein.com. When in doubt, find you on LinkedIn. Most of this is on LinkedIn. For the people on YouTube, Facebook watching or listening to the podcast in replay mode, LinkedIn, JD, just find them. It's really easy. But one of the things is for right now, I wanted to announce, not just because I'm a part of it, but because I want to support you no matter what, is that you're doing a virtual 2021 kickoff event on the 25th of January, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern.
Correct.
Talk about that for a quick minute. Who is that for? What are people gonna get from that?
Well, if you know me, you know I love events. And damn, I miss events. I miss them in the real world. So what choice do I have? I've got to go virtual with you folks. So I've been staging virtual events. I staged about a half dozen or so through 2020. And now this will be my first of 2021. It's a virtual kickoff. So it will have all of the elements of a kickoff meeting. And I think I'm bringing in some pretty sharp speakers who can address the key topics that we need to address as we hit the second year of the pandemic. So, Jason, if memory serves, you're one of those speakers, and you'll be speaking about authentic persuasion.
Yeah.
And we will also be joined by Rochelle Rice and Pablo Gonzalez, and my wingman, Howard Wallach, and Janice Litvin. So Janice will cover the topic of burnout, and fending off burnout, banishing burnout. Rochelle will talk about body-based leadership, and Pablo Gonzalez will talk about creating community through content. And my wingman, Howard Wallach, will talk about the state of the events and meetings industry. And he's a guy that you really should plug into because he's a performer. He's owned a production company for many, many years. And my gosh, the industry has been decimated. And he's better than anyone I know, he's doing these virtual events the way that they should be done. And if you know me, you know I like to have a little fun. That should have come through the interview, I would hope.
I think
so. And there'll be some fun. We're going to have some surprises because I'm full of surprises. I'm full of something. So surprises. We'll go with surprises for now. So it is January 25th. You can ping me for details, or you can find, you can ping Jason for details, 3 o'clock PM Pacific, 5 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock PM Eastern, and 12 o'clock midnight GMT for those of you in the UK. So set your alarms.
And so it's not a webinar, it's an event. It'll be on Zoom. Your requirement is cameras on, mics unmuted. It's also networking. You want to connect people, you want to share value. This isn't a JD webinar presentation
No.
with a sales pitch and call to action at the end. This is more about helping people start off their year, connecting each other, building relationships, and having a blast.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that because I'm part of it. It's because I've come to your other events as a participant and seen it and know what you do. And it will definitely be fun. And it's maxed at 100 people. So
that's right.
Be sure to register. Yeah.
I have doubled the number of attendees typically who register, and I have the Zoom Pro account, so I only hold 100. So get there, hold your place, I guess. Network with me a little earlier. I keep the Zoom room open a half hour early before the event, so you can watch me fumble around and try to get into the zone for the event. And then I'll keep the Zoom room open as long as people want to network at the end. And my events have kind of crossed into 3 hour territory there. So people, I just kick back and let them network. So that's the fun of it. And ideally we want to have fun at this stage. I just don't want to be the cookie cutter event person.
No.
Presenter. I'm not that guy.
That is not your thing. JD, thanks for joining me. Thanks for spending your Thursday morning here and sharing with the Authentic Persuasion crowd and LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, the podcast. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, man. Is this where I say thank you for having me?
Sure.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here. And that's it for this episode, everybody. I will catch you next Thursday, and we'll chat more about authentic persuasion. I'll see you. Have a great day. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.